Caroline, Willie, D. Mace, 102.5, 106.3, The Game, and The Game Nashville app. We are streaming live on Twitch, Twitter, YouTube, and Facebook Live every single day. Willie D. is en route to Arizona. The hottest team in the NHL, the Nashville Predators, taking on the Arizona Coyotes in Phoenix tomorrow. So no Willie D. today, but we'll catch up back with him tomorrow after morning skate. But D-Maze, I did want to touch on this. Jim Wyatt has had great content coming out from the owners' meetings. He had a sit-down with Will Levis today that I do want to get into. But he also had a sit-down with Rand Carthon at the owners' meetings. We know this time of year is lies, deceit, smoke screens. I'm going to make you think that I'm doing one thing and then I'm going to do something completely different. It happens every single year.
Exactly.
Where a team at the top of the draft takes a player and it's like, whoa, 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 what? Like, you took this player? Everybody assumed you were taking this player or that position, so on and so forth. So Jim Wyatt had a sit down with Rand Carthon at the owners' meetings. So, you know, Jim Wyatt's asking him all sorts of questions about the draft. So Jim Wyatt writes, with quarterbacks and receivers projected to go early, the Titans could have their pick of the top tackles when they're in the clock, currently holding the 7th overall pick. I think we kind of think that at this point. So the pick has to be a tackle, right? Rand Carthon says, everything is still on the table. This tackle class is really deep, so there are going to be valuable guys throughout the draft. It's so funny. Everybody has all of these speculations about what we could do and could not do. Even my 16-year-old daughter texted me the other day. Hey, are we taking this tackle that everybody had us taking? She's now looking at the mocks and asking what's going to happen. So it'll be interesting. We'll see where we are, but everything is on the table. Do you buy that? First of all, that's what Rand Carthon should be saying.
Yeah, that's what he should be saying.
But do we buy it?
Do we buy it? Nah, I really don't buy it. And listen, he's doing what GMs do. He don't want to show his hand because we understand, we know, you know, what happened in this situation last time when you sort of showed your hand. And it got outside of the building, and then all of a sudden,
and now you have to play that
exactly.
player.
Now you got to play the quarterback instead of being able to draft him.
Looks like the next Patrick Mahomes.
Exactly. So we understand why he is doing or saying what he's saying. Do I wholeheartedly believe him? Probably not. Because listen, at this juncture of the process, you can say everything is open. You know, we can take just about every avenue there is to take, all these avenues y'all talking about. Yeah, we can take any one of them. We can trade out of the pick. We can draft a pick. We can draft somebody at that 7th pick, the tackle, or we can draft a receiver if the receiver's there. Or we can move down, accumulate picks, and still get our guy we want. So he's going to leave himself open to having more options so no one can pinpoint which direction the Titans are going. Now, if you've been watching them, you think more than likely they could be going the tackle spot. Or if not that, possibly the wide receiver. You look at those two positions. But a lot of it is going to be predicated on what's done in front of them. Which team make a trade to try to move up in front of them to possibly get that guy that they want. If that happens, then now you got to readjust. So I do believe from the standpoint of, you know, what he said, because in theory, yes, because we don't know what's going to transpire before we even make our pick.
Right.
But I think realistically, if everything went status quo, like many are saying, then Alt will be there for you. And I don't know why you would even think, should I take Alt? Should I take a receiver? Should I take a video for the end? Should I take a... No, you need to take that tackle. Mm-hmm. Because aren't we trying to find out if this is our quarterback for the next 10, 15 years?
You need a solid offensive line to figure out if he is the guy.
Yeah, so a little bit of me understands why he's doing this. But do I believe it? If it falls the way we think it will, nobody makes trades. Even if somebody trades out of that 4th pick, as long as it's probably not the Chargers, who may be looking for a tackle or someone else, then you figure Alt will be there, and now they have their choice to take Alt or take another tackle. I think the player they want will be there. It's all about now whether they draft that player or not.
I don't blame Rand Carthon in the slightest for saying what he said of, look, everything's on the table.
Exactly.
When Rand Carthon says, you know, my daughter's texting me about this one tackle that everybody thinks we're going to take. Like, it's crazy. I think he's just trying to diminish the hype. Because I'll look at the Chargers. Mm-hmm. They're in the tackle market, are they not?
Yeah.
If I'm L.A. and I'm looking at all of these mock drafts that have Joe Alt to the Titans, if I'm the Chargers, why not say, look, I know that Malik Nabers is on the board, or even Marvin Harrison, but we really need a left tackle. We know the Titans want to take Alt at 7, so we're going to go ahead and take Alt at 5. Like, tipping your hand in any sort of way, I think, is a negative thing. But it really does seem as simple as Joe Alt or best tackle available at 7. And I hate that. Frankly, I hate that. Because what if Marvin Harrison Jr. is available at 7? What if Malik Nabers is available at 7? I mean, those are franchise-changing, at least projected to be, franchise-changing kinds of players. Like, if Marvin Harrison Jr. or Malik Nabers or Roma Dunze is guaranteed to be the next Justin Jefferson, can you pass on that guy? It'd be really tough to. And then you're kind of plagued with the same questioning conundrum that Brian Callahan was faced with the Cincinnati Bengals in the 2021 draft. Jamar Chase or Penei Sewell. They ultimately went Chase, and I don't think that they regret that decision. So it really seems like it has to be tackle or nothing, whether it's Alt or Fashanu or J.C. Latham out of Alabama. Because if it's not them, then where are you getting your left tackle? But in Mike Tannenbaum's recent mock draft, your favorite guy, Mike Tannenbaum, he has Marvin Harrison going 9 to Chicago. Can you take a tackle over Marvin Harrison Jr.?
For one, I don't see how he gets out of the top 5.
I don't either.
Now, listen, there will have to be a lot of trades, I think, to happen. At least 2 trades that will probably essentially put Marvin Harrison outside that top 4 or 5 pick. Because if either you're moving up to get a quarterback or you're moving up to get one of these tackles, one of the two. I'm not sure teams are moving that far up to get one of these wide receivers. As good as they are, the top 3 or 4, I don't think they're moving up to get them. But if Marvin Harrison is there, do you pass on him? On one hand, it's like, no, you don't.
But on the other, it's like,
We got to get our guy here. Now, listen, if, you know, you move down, or if somebody moves up and take that tackle and you feel, okay, they took Alt. If I can move down a couple of spots, can I still get the tackle that I want? You could possibly do that, but I still can't see them. And they can, but it would be hard pressed for me to think that if both the players you are looking at are on the board, you choose to go the wide receiver rather than the tackle. As good as Marvin Harrison is, as good as Dunze is, Nabers, you know, any one of these receivers, as good as they are, if Alt's there, I wouldn't want to be in that position. Let's just say that. I guess it's a good position in a sense, but then whoever you pick, if that other player that you didn't pick ends up showing out, whether you pick Harrison and Joe Alt end up being an all-pro his first year or pro bowler, and then you could see, like, man, this kid's going to really be the next Joe Thomas.
It's going to be the Corey Davis draft.
Exactly. You're going to be looking at it like, y'all passed up on a tackle which y'all needed. Y'all just got Ridley. Y'all didn't need a receiver for a starting receiver, not this year. Y'all needed a starting left tackle. And y'all passed him up, and look at what he's doing now. You wouldn't be able to live that one down. So, listen, I would rather pick that tackle that I desperately need and possibly be wrong than get that wide receiver and watch that tackle flourish.
Yeah.
And think, like, damn, we don't have a tackle. Well, we do, but it's, I mean, we're going to try to get another. We're going to have to try to replace that position next year.
Some guy we found on the street absolutely. Just to fill in that position.
So get that one player that you love. Get that tackle if he's there. And again, wide receiver for me, it's not that much. It's not a dire need as it was before they got Ridley.
Now that they have Ridley, it feels like, while wide receiver obviously was very much so a need even before they got Calvin Ridley, it felt like, okay, you can address that elsewhere. But you said you wouldn't want to be in that position. I wouldn't either, because it's like picking like the red pill or the blue pill, right? Like, you're going to have crazy experiences with either.
Exactly.
So how do I pick the greater of two great things? But Rand's probably going to be in that position.
Yeah.
It's,
with one of these receivers, probably not Harrison, but he may be with a Dunze or Neighbors.
Or a Dunze. Or Brock Bowers. Or Dallas Turner. Or Joe Alt and Olufashinu. Like, there's going to be elite premier players at dire positions of need available at seven. And I think that you could justify, all right, we're going to pass on Brock Bowers because he plays the tight end position, and we don't feel like that's as important of a position for us right now as left tackle is. I think you can probably swallow that one a little bit easier than if Malik Neighbors is on the board. Malik Neighbors just ran a 4.3 40 at his pro day, and a 42-inch vertical. Like, he – there's a lot – I saw an Adam Schefter tweet that he said there's a lot of people in the NFL, general manager scouts, that have him as the best receiver in this draft. If he's available, which he very well could be at seven, and Joe Alt's available, it's a tough one. That's a conundrum that Rand Carthon is going to be faced with. So I'm glad it's not my job, but it is Rand's job.
Yeah, it is.
But if I was Rand, I think I would have to take the tackle.
Yeah, I'm taking the tackle, you know, because we haven't been able since, you know, really since Taylor Lewan's injury. They haven't been secure at that position, because even with Taylor coming back, he's especially that first year, he still was hampered by the knee injury, and then he started to show flashes of what he was before, but then he gets hurt, so it was never any stability because he was hurt then back. Even though he was a good player, there was never any stability. So they haven't had true stability at that position for the last 3 years, really. Because, again, it wasn't Taylor Lewan's ability to play the game. It was his availability and him still dealing with the injury. They need to get to a point where they don't have to worry about that position anymore, at least for the next 5 to 6 drafts.
I'm sick of worrying about tackles.
Yeah, exactly. That's
sick of worrying about the freaking kicker.
That's why I say, you know, this is a – this is a position that, to me, you have to. If Alt's there, I don't care if Neighbors is there. If Alt's there, I'm taking him. You know, and then what I got to worry about, too, with Neighbors. Was it more him or was it more the quarterback? This is what we're going to run into. Was it more him? Was it more the quarterback? He went from 3 touchdowns to 14 touchdowns. Which player am I getting? Am I getting this year's Neighbors that can continue to, you know, progress? Or am I getting, you know, the second year, 1,000-yard, 3-touchdown Neighbors where he wasn't as explosive? Well, with Marvin Harrison, I've been seeing this his whole career. You know, even when they had, you know, Wilson and all those other guys, you still was seeing this. Even with those guys on the rosters 2 years ago, he still was the best wide receiver on their team. That's crazy to think about. And I think a lot of it is because he didn't run in the combine. He didn't do any pro day. So people are trying to not all of a sudden like, yeah, we've seen the greatness, but you're going outside the norm because you're not working out. So we're gonna demote you for that, and we're gonna elevate the guy who did work out. And Neighbors did a great job in his workout. Neighbors is a good player. I'm not gonna sit here and deny that. But had Marvin Harrison worked out, ran a 4.3, even if he ran a 4.4 flat, somewhere on the 4.4s, vertical jump was 40. We assume it's going to be somewhere around that. His 3-cone drill was very quick. He still would remain the number one receiver. But because he didn't do all this stuff, and Neighbors has, Neighbors is creeping up in some people's mind because of his test, not necessarily what you saw on the field. You saw on the field. You saw, yeah. What you saw on the field was damn good.
Yeah.
But if you compare the two, Harrison has been doing, like, he's been doing it with good talent on the side of him, Wilson and all those guys, and then without him, when he was the only guy on that team that was capable of catching passes because the other guy was hurt a lot. This kid, don't pass up on him. You may think Neighbors is great, and he probably will be. But this guy, Harrison, barring injuries with any one of these guys, but barring injuries with Harrison, this is a surefire for me. This is probably, other than Calvin Johnson, and probably Larry Fitzgerald, but more so Calvin Johnson, this is probably, there was three guys that I've seen, and I know I keep changing this. There's three guys that I've seen when I saw them, I'm like, damn, they're going to be damn good players. They're going to be, like, they're going to have Hall of Fame careers. Mm-hmm. When I first saw Calvin Johnson at Georgia Tech, I said, this kid's going to be good.
Yeah.
He's going to be, because he has everything that Randy Moss has, but he knows how to run every route. Like, he can run every route on the route tree. And he's big like Randy, and he's fast like Randy. This guy's going to be he's going to be something to deal with. Larry Fitzgerald, same thing. He just catches the ball better than anybody I've ever seen, other than Chris Carter. Mm-hmm. Now I put D-Hop in that thing. And then Julio Jones, and now Marvin Harrison. Those four guys, or three guys, three or four guys, when I saw them, I said, those are, if they stay healthy, those are Hall of Fame players. And it has sort of played out that way. Marvin Harrison falls right in that group. There's nothing he can't do.
So would you pass up on him at 7 if he's there?
If my tackle's there, I still would pass up on him.
So all of that.
All of that. I said all that sweet stuff about Marvin Harrison. But Joe Aud is that for the tackle position, and you need him. Mm-hmm. Marvin Harrison, you don't need him. That's like a luxury.
I think, like, every team needs, like, Marvin Harrison.
If I had him, that'd be great. But if I don't have him, I still have pass catchers. I still have D-Hop. I still have Calvin Ridley. Hopefully, training comes on. Nick Westbrook-Ikhine is there. We're going to draft another receiver later in the draft. But Joe Aud, I'm taking him. As good as Harrison is or Neighbors is, I'm taking Joe Aud. But I'm telling you this.
I would have to, too.
Marvin Harrison is going – He's going to be what Jefferson and Chase and all those these young guys are. Mm-hmm. He's going to be the next Devontae Smith. He's going to be the next guy. Alabama is, hell, they're wide receiver. You, I don't know.
Oh, two of the receivers that you just named went to the same school.
Alabama U. Alabama, I mean, Alabama is wide receiver U, and then you could put Ohio State up there, too. So it's 1-2.
Teammates.
And then LSU.
Who are the two best receivers in the NFL right now? Justin Jefferson and Ja'Marr Chase.
No, Justin Jefferson and Tyreek Hill.
And Ja'Marr Chase.
No, he's not. He's not even in my top four.
You're
because
crazy.
Because he's hurt all the time.
He's not hurt all the time.
He's hurt. He was hurt half this season.
That does okay. Fine.
Okay, so I can't give him top.
Justin Jefferson was hurt this season too. You're gonna drop him out of your top two.
But Justin Jefferson is Justin. We've seen
him. We've seen Ja'Marr Chase.
But Justin Jefferson, he's just a different breed. Okay, he's a different breed. But okay, y'all got Justin Jefferson. Y'all got Ja'Marr Chase. We're not gonna count Neighbors because he's not in the NFL right now. But I predict you can count Neighbors too.
I think Ohio State is still wide receiver U.
I don't know. I think Alabama's wide receiver U.
Because of Devontae Smith?
Devontae Smith.
Amari Cooper.
Amari Cooper. Waddle.
Jerry Judy.
Jerry Judy.
Okay, Jerry Judy doesn't belong in that list.
Yes, he does. He does belong in that list.
Yes, he does
belong
in that list. He just got traded for a sixth round pick.
This is where I disagree.
He belongs on that list.
Yes, he does.
He belongs on that list. I'm not saying.
Then I will add Jarvis Landry to that list.
No, I'm not
as well.
Saying.
Go ahead.
I'm not saying
and
that.
Odell Beckham Jr.
I'm not saying that. Okay, you can add Odell, but Jarvis Landry, no, you can't add Jarvis Landry.
Jerry Judy's had two seasons. Jerry Judy's had none.
Yes, he has.
Jerry Judy.
He was in Denver. How many people can flourish in Denver right now?
Lloyd Cushenberry did.
That was different.
Yes, where he went to school.
Different position.
Okay, you have Julio Jones, you have Devontae Smith, you have Waddle, you have Jerry Jeudy, Calvin Ridley, who else came
Amari
out?
Cooper.
Amari Cooper. Let me see. There has to be one or two other guys out there.
Look, there are a lot of really good receivers that went to Alabama. A lot of really good receivers that went to Ohio State. Oh, yeah. A lot of good receivers that went to LSU.
So those let's just say those three teams, college teams,
yeah,
could be considered, however you want to put them, could be considered wide receiver U. But for me, it's Alabama, Ohio State, then LSU.
Enjoy Amari Cooper and Jerry Jeudy from my team that I am building, the Fighting Caroline Fentons. I'm going to take Justin Jefferson and Jamar
Chase. Of course
Chase.
You are.
And I'm going to beat you every single Sunday. All right, I want to get your reaction on this coming up next. This is the difficult conundrum that that Rand Carthon is – I'm looking at Joe Dubin's book right now – that Rand Carthon is faced with. It is a realistic situation that Rand Carthon is going to have to choose between Joe Alt or Malik Nabers, or Joe Alt and Marvin Harrison Jr., or Joe Alt and Roma Dunze, or Joe Alt or Olafashnu, or any of these elite players in the draft. But can you pass on one of these elite receivers for the left tackle? Rand Carthon says anything is on the table. We'll get into our thoughts on this coming up next. Caroline Billy D. Mays, 102.5, 106.3 The Game.
With how deep they are, the draft is at both of those positions, like how do you weigh like a top O-lineman against one of the top receivers and what you can do coming back in the season?
Again, I think from if you look at it strategically, it's about, you know, the value, right? So if you're sitting there and there's a receiver there, knowing that there's a deep O-line class, it's like, all right, where can we, you know, supplement this position, you know, later? So it's about playing those two parts off of each other, whether that's in free agency as well in the draft. So it's about trying to mix and match those two pieces.
There you go. That was Rand Carthon at the Combine. Caroline Willie D. Mace. We're broadcasting from the Spring Hill Heating and Cooling Game Nashville Studios, keeping your home feeling comfortable all year round. Now, Jim Wyatt sat down with Rand Carthon at the owners' meetings, and Rand Carthon was persistent and said, everything is on the table. That's what he should say. I don't know how much I buy it, but that is what he should say.
Yeah.
One thing that I do buy, though, that I do wholeheartedly believe is the truth at this point in the draft process, when Rand Carthon says... excuse me, I'm trying to find it. When he's talking about moving back in the draft, he said, everything is on the table with where we are. You can stay. You can say you want to trade out, but in order to trade, you need a partner, so we'll see where we are. I do believe that that is most likely in play, that if there is a trade partner that calls Rand Carthon on draft day and says, hey, look, we're the Minnesota Vikings at 11. We'll trade you, let's say, hypothetically, our next year's one to move up to 7. I think that would be something that Rand Carthon would have to entertain and is willing to entertain.
Yeah, I think I think you have to be open and receptive to, you know, offers that are brought, you know, to the table, especially the day of the draft. Obviously, I'm sure they're getting phone calls the closer and closer you get to draft. And trying to judge the temperature on what the Titans will do or what they will not do based upon who's available. But I think closer to the draft or even on draft day, I think that's when, if there is any move to be made, I think we'll start really hearing about it the day of the draft. You don't want that stuff to leak out. And I believe Rand when he says, listen, we want to keep things in-house, whether it's contract talk, you know, potential, you know, guys that we're looking at, free agency, all that. We want to keep it sort of in-house until, you know, we can either make that move happen or whatnot, because the last thing you want to happen is what happened last year.
Yeah.
Now, whose fault was it? I don't know, but it got out. He wants everything. Exactly. He wants everything to stay in-house. That's why not much is getting out this go-around. But before I continue with that, you and I talked about the onside rule changes quickly.
Yes, yeah. So the new kickoff rule changes, we got a couple texts in the text line asking what happens with squib kicks and onside kicks with this new rule.
Well, onside kicks, it said a new rule crafted by NFL special teams coordinators. See, all of this was crafted by the coordinators because they didn't want it to completely go away. It says it would allow teams to attempt an onside kick only That's the key word. Only when trailing in the fourth quarter and requires them to declare in advance. So no longer can you just come out at half and kick an onside kick, even if you tell them you're kicking it. Based upon what the rule is, you can only do it in the fourth quarter when you're behind. And then you got to notify the team that you're kicking an onside kick.
Got it.
So okay. Just to sort of clarify that stuff up. But, you know, back to Rand Carthon. Now, again, if there's an opportunity for them to move off that seventh and still get one of those individuals they want, then you have to listen to it. Mm-hmm. Now, whether you decide to go down that route or not, that's up to you. But I think you owe the fan base. You owe the organization. Even, you know, you owe the organization a listen to. Like, okay,
totally.
What are you talking here? What do you want to give us? Okay, all right. Nah, that's not enough. We're good. We'll stay here. And then maybe wait half an hour later and that same person calls back like, "Oof, all right, we'll give you this." Yeah, we'll give you this. And it, maybe it's like, okay, let's do it. But I think that will happen sort of like the A.J. Brown thing did happen, closer to when you're about to pick than anything else. Because if the cat gets out of the bag before you pick and y'all ain't got those things worked, ironed out and everything else, somebody else can say, "Well, I want to move in. Let me move up before you to get that player that you want." Mm-hmm. Now it throws everything off for you.
Right. So you can have you should have those conversations.
Yeah, you should.
You can say no.
Yeah.
It doesn't mean that you're going to, but I think you should be having those conversations if there's a team desperate enough to give you a one, mm-hmm. to absolutely sweeten the pot. One texter texts in, says, "You're acting like Joel Alt's for sure is a for sure number one OT in the draft. Last year, everyone said that the Ohio State offensive tackle, Paris Johnson Jr., was the best out of last year's draft, but he wasn't." One thing, there's no such thing as a for sure thing. Mm-hmm. We can think that there is.
Yes, exactly.
If you're picking a player in the top 10 in the first round, mm-hmm. you expect him to be. Yeah. But you never really know for sure. But I'm not going to pretend like I'm an offensive line enthusiast. Everyone who is has said Joe Alt is the most pro-ready prospect, mm-hmm. not tackle, prospect in this draft.
Yeah, so you're going by – you're trusting the information that you're getting from your scouts. You're trusting your eyes and what you see on film. You're trusting, you know, the conversation that you and Joe Alt will have prior to the draft. So you're trusting these three things. That's going to give you your whatever. That's going to give you your answer for now. Mm-hmm. That's what's going to cause you to draft him or don't draft him. That's with any player. But it does seem like Alt is, like you said, if you're just talking about pound for pound guy that's ready for the NFL, he's probably more than likely the most ready of anybody, quarterbacks and all, anybody to step in and play immediately.
And you at least have the trust mm-hmm. in Bill Callahan to make that evaluation and that decision. Tyler Texan says, "I'd be very fine if they draft Harrison or Neighbors over a tackle because those guys are game-changing players. The thing I can't accept is drafting a Dunze over Alt because I think he's so much less of a sure thing." I don't know if I would agree mm-hmm. with that, but also I will tell you this. Look at Andre Dillard this past year. Mm-hmm. You want to tell me he was a game-changer, but in a negative way?
He was a game-changer.
In a bad way.
Exactly.
So I think that left tackles absolutely can be game changers. Ask Will Levis mm-hmm. if he thinks the left tackle is a game changer. It's just not very sexy. No. It's not as sexy as a, you know, a receiver with a 45-yard reception. But I think that you can absolutely call a left tackle a game changer.
Oh, he can be. I mean, the notion that, oh, left tackles or offensive linemen can be game changers. Go ask Philadelphia Eagles. Go ask them if their offensive line – you know, 2 years ago was a game changer or not for them. Ask them every time they line up for the tush push whether their offensive line aren't game changers. They are game changers, people.
Cowboys.
Cowboys. They are game changers, people. They may not get the notoriety. They don't score the touchdowns unless you got, like, soft hands. You know, some offensive linemen catch touchdowns every now and then. We see that. Even Taylor DeJuan caught a touchdown pass, I believe, in his career. So, offensive linemen got soft hands. But, and they can be touchdown makers every once in a while or catchers every once in a while. But to just sit here and say, an offensive lineman is a game changer. What do you think allowed those game-changing plays to happen? A good offensive line, a left tackle that you don't have to worry about, a center that ain't getting pushed in a quarterback's lap. That's what allowed those game-changing plays to happen when they're throwing the ball down the field to Calvin Ridley or D-Hop or Traylon. They're getting these big plays. Yeah, you see the big play. But if they ain't had those offensive linemen up front, you wouldn't be getting those big plays. So I would tend to disagree. Offensive linemen are playmakers, but in different ways. To me, offensive line is the most important, beside the quarterback, the offensive line is the most important position in the NFL. Mm-hmm. It is. Offensive line is. If you got an offensive line, you got a better shot at winning. You ain't got an offensive line, well, hold, but better say a few prayers before that game, because you might end up on the sideline hurt. Ask both of our quarterbacks.
Yeah, just watch a single down of any of Tennessee Titans football this past
season. Go watch Carolina Panthers.
Oh, man.
That little guy will tell you how much he needs an offensive line and how much they can be playmakers for him.
And I'll take Tim's, his expertise. He's played the position. Mm-hmm. We asked him, what's the most important thing to build around a young quarterback? Without hesitation, he said, a good offensive line.
Yeah.
And I think a lot of other quarterbacks would agree.
Because an offensive line, it's like, the offensive line is like five big brothers. Who would not love to have like 5'6", 6'4", 6'5", and maybe the oldest brother, the youngest brother, is 6'7", and all of them weigh over 300 pounds. If those are your brothers, would you be scared to go anywhere?
Absolutely not.
Absolutely. Like, I got my five big brothers right here. Y'all messing with me? Ain't nobody messing with me. That's how a quarterback feels. I got my five big brothers in front of me, and all of them damn good. I have no care in the world. I can drop back and just throw the football. Why? Because I don't have to worry about Aaron Brewer being in my lap, wanting a nap. I don't have to worry about Dillard over here.
Andre Turnstile.
Exactly. And I'm getting hit in the back of the head.
Or Dylan Raiden's false
exactly.
start.
I don't have to worry about any of that stuff no more. Why? Because I have capable offensive linemen, good offensive linemen. And I got a left tackle that's 6'7", 6'8", 350 pounds, like a brick wall.
Mm-hmm. I'm with you. I'm with you 100%. Another texter says, I don't care who's on the board at 7. If Marvin Harrison Jr. is there, you take him. No questions asked whatsoever. Don't overthink it. Now, to a certain extent, I would agree. A player of Marvin Harrison Jr.'s caliber, you can't pass on a guy like that. But then I'll ask the question, who's playing left tackle?
And don't tell me, oh, you can get a left tackle in the second round. You can get a left tackle in the fourth round. You can get a left tackle in the fifth round. Oh, you can. But they ain't going to be what Joe Alt is. And it may take them 5 years to get to being a starter. Or they can be a depth piece. You just never know. But
Marvin Harrison Jr. might be that kind of player that if he's at 7, you say, we don't care about left tackle. We'll figure it out. We have to take him. And maybe that's Rand Carthon's approach. But I just look at it. Yeah, it's a really hard decision. And also, let's keep in mind, Marvin Harrison Jr. is probably not going to be there at 7.
Yes. If they didn't go out and get Calvin Ridley, then this would be an ongoing debate. Tackle, receiver, which one do you want? But since they've gotten Calvin Ridley and D-Hop is still here, hopefully Traylon comes on this year, I think that's a position you can say, okay, we are okay at this position. Doesn't mean we don't need another guy. But if we didn't get another guy via draft, we still would be okay at this position. But what we ain't okay at.
Offensive tackle.
The tackle. We're not okay at that position. We can't just pass on him and say, oh, we'll be fine. We can get a guy in the fourth round. Nah, more than likely you can't. Not a starter right away anyway.
Right. Austin and Clarksville Texan left tackle in next year's draft. But who's playing left tackle this year?
Yeah, who's playing left tackle this year?
And you can find a body, a player that's, you know, you can find him on the side of the street.
Caroline, did they see how many times Will Levis and Ryan Tannehill was on the ground? People, it's good that y'all have short-term memory. I get it. It's great to have it at times, but not in this situation. It's not good to have a short-term memory. How many times was your quarterback on his back, on his bottom? How many times was both of them on the sideline because they were injured because of this offensive line? And now y'all sitting here saying, oh, well, if Neighbors is there or if Harrison is there and Old is there, I'm taking Neighbors or Harrison. Well, you're going to see the same things you saw last year. Your quarter, and the part about this one is you don't have a backup like Ryan Tannehill now. You don't. Mm-hmm. You got Mason Rudolph, who is he's a good backup. But do you want Mason Rudolph coming in the game?
No.
Probably not. Okay. So, people, don't.
Then Mason Rudolph gets hurt.
Exactly. This short-term memory y'all have, y'all must have forgotten that your quarterback had two ankle injuries, had to have surgery one time. And then your rookie quarterback, he gets hurt because of the offensive line. Are y'all forgetting that?
It's easy to forget, right? Because
not for me.
Because the thought
not for Will Levis.
Not for Will Levis. And it's not even just the quarterbacks, even though that's a massive, massive part of it. Like, that's 99% of the pie. But you couldn't do anything else offensively. You couldn't throw the ball. You struggled to run the ball. You couldn't give the quarterback time. I don't know, but I think I can expect that Tim Kelly's playbook went from like Harry Potter length to like children's book because of how hampered they were by the offensive line. They couldn't do anything offensively. So it's easy to get caught up in what a receiver could do and the flashy plays and, you know, the Ja'Marr Chase, Joe Burrow, Cincinnati Bengals in the 2021 draft kind of approach to this draft. But don't forget how bad this offensive line was, and let's be honest, still is.
Like, some things just need a little salt to it, okay? That changes the whole flavor. Mm-hmm. And the salt is the offensive line, and the salt is the tackle. Do you want to go out there with a tasteless offense? Or do you want to go out there with an offense with some taste to it? Some pizzazz, some.
A little something.
Yeah, a little something. You better go get that towel because that's your salt. He's going to make the whole dish. He's going to make the whole dish taste better. Why? Mm-hmm. Because what he does affect the guy next to him, the guard, and what the guard does affect the center. What the center does affect the guard, and then so forth and so on. So if you tie them all together, you get you some good players, then we ain't got to worry about that. But if you don't, people, y'all going to be arguing about this again next year. Why didn't they go get a tackle? Look at what he's doing over here. Look at what that guy's doing over there. Offenses can't run if you don't have an offensive line. It's like a car. Car can't run if you ain't got an engine. Mm-hmm. We saw the Titans last year. Like you said, you know how many times that their offensive coordinator probably wanted to call this play, that play, that play. But then once he looked at his offensive line, was like, damn, I can't call that play. They can't block.
Protect.
Yeah, they can't protect my quarterback.
All of that being said, if Ault's gone and you don't think Olufashinu is very good.
It's a different story,
Let me take that back. Not that he's not very good. If you don't think that Olufashinu is the 7th best player in the draft, you think he's 15th best player in the draft, then you reevaluate.
Exactly.
But where it stands right now, if Ault is available, I would have a very hard time passing on him. All right, we'll wrap it up with more of your phones. Everything's on the table. Titans and those red freaking hot Predators in what was, I think, probably the most exciting Predators game that I've seen since I've gotten to Nashville. Everything's on the table, and we'll get into those coming up next. Caroline, Willie, D. May, say go to thegamenashville.com/bracket challenge and fill out your 16-team bracket to compete to win great prizes, including tickets to see Kings of Leon at Bridgestone Arena on September 26th. The 1025 The Game Bracket Challenge brought to you by ESPN Bet Sportsbook, Twin Peaks, and Volunteer Hose and Gasket.
Fired all.
Caroline, Willie, D. Mace. We're brought to you by Zen Sports. Start earning cash rewards on your bets today. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-889-9789. Terms and conditions apply. Must be 21 or older and in Tennessee to bet. The Nashville Predators simply cannot lose. They cannot lose. They haven't lost in the entire existence. Yeah, 25 years.
Yeah.
But last night, I think, was so telling and showing of the just relentlessness and the lack of quit that this team has. down 4-1 at the end of the second period, I don't know how you could think that this team can't beat anybody. But when it comes to the playoffs, teammates, there's three teams that are likely to see the Predators in the playoffs: Dallas, Vancouver, and Colorado. I don't want a piece of Colorado, because I think Colorado is probably the best, if not one of the best teams in the NHL. One type of conversation has been, well, the Predator, I would rather the Predators play Dallas because it's a closer trip. I know you haven't, you know, gone back and forth in a seven-game series, but, I mean, you've experienced travel and having to play a game and travel back. How much of travel do you think is a factor in all of this, or should be?
You know, in a seven-game series, I think it's more of a it's more of an issue than saying somebody playing a one-off.
Yeah.
You know, because
like potentially a seven-game series.
Yeah. If this thing goes seven games, you got to travel four times back and forth, because you are the lower-seeded team.
But also, so do they.
Yeah, they got to travel too. But it's harder traveling, at least from my experience, traveling from the East Coast to the West Coast rather than the West Coast to the East Coast.
Interesting.
So, you know, because when you're playing, your body's still, you know, it's still sort of, it's like I'm playing, but I shouldn't be playing. I should be already done, in a sense.
Yeah.
You know, so I guess it all depends on when the game starts. Because if it starts late, then, you know, it starts late in California. 7 o'clock, what, 8, 9 o'clock here? That's a late game. Yeah. So, you know, coming from west to east is a little bit, at least for me, it was a little bit easier.
The point streak continues. Predators take it 5-4 in overtime against the Vegas Golden Knights. That's going to do it for us today. Stillman and Company, it's up next.
Be love on your people. Peace. You can't stay.